Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You are listening to The Mauer Report, a live radio show that ventures into the mysteries of life, as well as the hot topics of the day, either political or business.
Oh, there it is. That's why it was so low. I've got to apologize to the listeners who may have just turned their headphones way up to hear the intro music, and then I just blasted them out because the intro music was way down. That's horrible.
Oh.
Beauties of live radio, but horrible for the podcast listener that just wants to scream at me. So go ahead. I'll give you a few seconds here. Go ahead. Call me stupid. Okay. Good. Got that out of your system? Okay. Much better. My guest tonight is Bill Hauser of... You have some long, fancy title, but I know you for being the Ghost Box whatever. I don't even know if you have a title for that. Bill, how are you doing tonight? And then you can explain to me, fill in all these gaps of stuff that I didn't write down, apparently.
Well, I'm doing good, Jim. My name is Bill Hauser, a.k.a. Can Dewey, and I'd just like to say hello to all your great audience out there.
So let's take two steps back, because we're going to, obviously, like I said, I know you're known for the Ghost Box. We're not doing that tonight, first and foremost, so if you're here for that, stay tuned, because we're not doing that, but we're going to dig into the nuts and bolts of that. But first, I think we'd be not doing this conversation justice if we didn't figure out the three steps that got them there. So what got you interested in the paranormal?
Well, it started when I was a kid, like really young age. I started having paranormal experiences back when I was like 4 and 5, around that time, and it just progressed along the way. And I was seeing shadow people, and every once in a while, I'd see like it looked like a hologram. But back then, I didn't know exactly what I was looking at. But it was a ghostly figure of an apparition, especially. Sunday afternoon, sometimes we'd go visit the graveyard after Sunday dinner from church and all that, and something would come follow me home. So that's kind of what got me started in the paranormal originally, is my personal experiences.
So, I mean, you were young then, so tell me about the first time you told somebody what was going on, or what you thought was going on.
Well, I mentioned a few times to my mom. She was a little bit more open. My dad, definitely not. He didn't care for hearing that kind of stuff. He thought it was just an act of imagination of a young age of myself. And, my mom was a little bit more open. She kind of had somewhat of a thought that maybe he's seeing something paranormal, because she was from England. And over there, it was quite common to, an older residence and older homes to have a resident ghost and that. So, yeah, she was a bit more open-minded.
So did that fade in your life, or were you keep having experiences, or how do we get moving forward?
A little later, I started not being able to see them anymore, but I could sense them around me. I knew when there was some kind of... something was just not right. And so, I would pick up on my senses there, my spidey senses. So, it happened. And then, of course, I went to some people's homes a few times after church and that, and went downstairs into the rec room. And, I started seeing things move around and, all these kinds of experiences that, just couldn't be explained at that young age.
I don't want to say fast forward, but okay, so you're kind of still out there. And then what gets you, I'm just going to ask the question. So how do we get to the Ghost Box? Because that seems like has to be some kind of moment of divinity there.
Well, actually, we need to really start with ghost hunting. I did that first of all. So I've been doing ghost hunting for over 25 years. And
Hold on. For the listeners out there, 25 years is before it was cool.
I know. Yeah, I was doing it way back when tape recorders and that kind of stuff was being used and for EVP work and that. So, and photos were done by film, 35 millimeter film and that. So,
and when he says tape recorders, he means one of actual tape in them. Not to make you feel, not to make you feel old, but there's some people out there who don't get it. No.
Yeah, we didn't have digital recorders, so So when that came along, that made it a lot more easier. Believe me.
Well, it made everything easier, right? The you didn't need to go get the film process. You didn't need to go find new tapes. You didn't need to do this. You didn't need to do that.
Yeah, and you saved yourself a hell of a lot of money too. So.
Yeah, I look at some of the digital pictures I took, you know, in the dark, and I'm like, I'm glad I didn't have to pay for that because it's useless.
Yeah, I remember getting a few photos like that that just there was something there, but just to show someone, they just wouldn't they'd say, you know, overexposure or, you know, whatever. They would have some logical explanation for it.
Well, everybody has a logical explanation for any kind of thing that you put in the picture. It's called Photoshop.
Yeah. Well, back then, it was shoot, point and shoot, and hope for the best, I think.
Of course, for those fun people out there, photo, you know, there's those people that say, well, Photoshop wasn't around back in the day. Well, the picture of Abraham Lincoln and Mary Todd was like the original Photoshop because they never had their picture taken together.
Yeah, that's a mystery in itself, shall we say.
So... Well, I mean, or is it? Or is it somebody that was had the two pictures and put them together and made some money?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so you started ghost hunting. How? I mean, you did because okay. So this is all pre-internet, right? So how did you find these people to go ghost hunting with, or did you do it by yourself?
Well, actually, I went out quite a number of times by myself when I first started, and then finally I met up with some people, and they took me on, and. Yeah, we went to Vancouver Island, to Victoria, went to some really interesting places there, and that's where I started to really have a better understanding of the paranormal when you got to be with, you know, medium psychics and, you know, really nuts and bolts kind of guys that were really into, you know, documenting the paranormal. So, yeah, that really gave me some... you know, a certain amount of grounding, shall we say, to understand the phenomena and so on.
So, in the early days, because you had had some experiences, how did you relate to the mediums? Did you, were you, I guess the question I'm going to ask is, because I know, you know, I've had some experiences too, but I'm always kind of a little bit, I'll say the word, it's a bad word, skeptical of mediums, just because, I don't know, just, I'm skeptical of everybody, I guess, it's first, I guess we should preface by saying that, and then it kind of doubles down when you start getting into things that you don't quite understand. But you had some experiences, like I, you know, like I said, I did. So did you take to that more readily, or were you just kind
of?
Yeah,
that actually helped, Jim. Those experiences of the younger years of my life, and then I had an experience in Ross Bay Cemetery. Because back then I wasn't doing like things like grounding and, you know, like your personal protection. And I am somewhat sensitive to a degree as well. So what happened was basically I got the energy just drained out of me. By the end of that night, I was as white as a ghost. And I definitely wasn't feeling very good. And I felt like that for quite a few days after. But one of the people there, she said, well, you basically got your energy zapped and you need to protect yourself, Bill. And so she gave me some, you know, understanding about what's that all about. And, yeah, that's was kind of the footing of grounding and protection that I started to do back then. And then, you know, that just progressed along the way. And, you know, I've developed sort of my own, you know, I would say my own style of investigating. And then, you know, now I'm an independent and, you know, I do a little bit of work with some paranormal groups that are out there, but, I tend to like to be by myself quite a bit. And then, the ghost box, well, that came on, back in T10. Before that I'd heard about it and, you know, I'd heard some, stuff, about the ghost box and that back in 2007 and that kind of got my interest, but I hadn't really plunged into it back then until 2010. And then I bought one and hacked it back then. And that's basically how I got started. Once I hacked that radio, I got one another radio and another, and it just kept going and going.
So we'll get to the hacking and all that stuff here in a minute. I'm interested in the spiritual protection bit of it. How has that changed from day one to, well, when you started? I don't know if there was a day one. It probably came gradually to you as you started kind of realizing what was going on till today.
Oh, it helps big now. I don't have a lot of those kind of problems on investigations. A lot of times I have people around me when I'm with different and there's some newbies in there, and a lot of times they get affected to some degree. And, you know, you mentioned about protection and that. So, yeah, you pass on that information just like this lady did years ago. So, for me, it's a lot more easier to go out there. And, you know, I've gone into some pretty hairy different locations. You know, there's a lot of bad energy, shall we say, that's associated with some of these places. So, yeah, people were, you know, I'd been attacked in the past and so on.
So, another technical, well, not really a technical question, more of a, yeah, I guess I'm going to go back to technical question. The difference between investigating, because you mentioned one of those hair-raising moments being in a cemetery, being inside versus outside. I mean, we're all older now. We all prefer to be inside. I'll speak for myself on that one. You can disagree with me, but am I right in saying that? That you... I don't even know where I was going with that.
Yeah, I still enjoy doing outdoor stuff if the weather cooperates. Here on the West Coast, we definitely have a lot of rain in the fall months and so on. So, yeah, it can get a little chilly, that's for sure, and damp and so on. So, yeah, it's nice to be indoors when you can.
Like I said, I thought I had this great train going, and then I realized I don't know where I was going, which is really special around these parts. So take me back to those days you were investigating with people. Doing EVP research back then, did you enjoy doing that?
Yeah, I found EVP, you know, when I first started doing it with the cassette tapes and that, and the little recorders. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And, yeah, I was always surprised with the voices that were coming through. And, you know, you always did a sort of a checklist to, you know, try to weed out any contamination ahead of time and then so on. And, you know, those kind of aspects with it. So, I mean, doing, traditional EVP work is not that easy. So it takes a bit of effort in getting those results.
So I'll be the first to tell you. You're gonna find out a lot about me tonight that you probably don't like, but here we go. Here's Jim Truth number one. I rarely hear EVPs. I don't know. But I had somebody explain to me once that it's the frequency that I hear, I just don't hear them. Which makes perfectly sense to me because I don't hear them. But, oh God, 12 years ago, 11, 12 years ago, whatever it was, we did a local investigation at a event and the radio station was there. They did it live. And so our team got to meet, well, they told me they had EVPs, right? And I'm like, okay, play them, whatever. They played them for me and I'm like, whatever, you know? And I get in this radio studio with the DJ and we're talking about it because he was there that night and we're going through them. And for whatever reason, he hands me his headphones while we're in the break, and he's like, make sure this is the one you want to play. And I'm like, I'm not the person to hear this. You know, so I'm trying to pass his head, and I just threw it up to my, and I heard it. And I went, and he's like, what? And I'm like, I'm like, play it again. I handed it to them, and they're like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, that's fine. We'll talk about that one. And I'm like, it said it. And and he's counting back, and we're coming back, and I'm just dumbfounded. I have nothing to say. Probably was the first time I heard one. So I made him play the rest of them that we sent him before I left.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
And he's like,
wow.
They're trying to explain to him that I'm an idiot. And I'm like, dude, I can hear them. I'm like, I just need $800 headphones.
Yeah, well, your equipment is important too, so.
I guess that was my point in this, that A, there's a lot of time that goes into it. And I don't need to tell you that, but.
Yeah.
And B, there is the art of the equipment that that you do have.
Yeah.
So now that let's kind of switch into modern EVP, because with with it being digital, everybody knows it's A, easier to flub, but it's, is that helping people or is that hurting people because of the flubbing and the, I don't want to say doctoring, but you can turn it up and do all, slow it down and all this other stuff. I guess you could slow it down before, but it's really, really easy now.
Yeah, well, the types of software that you can use, yeah, you can really change the whole pitch and sound of an EVP, and you know, you clean it up, do a little scrub, as they used to call, and stuff like that. So, you know, I mean, to be honest with you, you still have to use a little bit of discernment when you hear stuff like on, you know, other radio shows. They'll have EVPs by people and that. So, but you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, it's those kind of frequencies. Yeah, you're not going to hear them. Very seldom do I hear an EVP, but you know, once in a while I'll hear a disembodied voice. That's happened, you know, a few times here and there. But yeah, that's why you have a digital recorder or whatever, it can pick up those lower frequencies.
So, okay, so let's get into the ghost box for a little bit here, because that's, I don't want to say your baby, but what's a better word for that at this point? Okay, so 2015, or 2010, I don't know where I got 15 from. That's always special when I just pull random stuff out of the air. Where'd you hear the first one at? Because that's the interesting part of all this.
Well, actually, it was first time I heard of it, I believe it was on Coast to Coast, about 2007. There was a guest, and he had been using the Ghost Box, and so he had some sample audio highlights and that were played, and it kind of sparked my interest, and so I looked into it a little bit more, and then the name Frank Sumption came up, and he was the guy that, you know, created the Ghost Box. So, I mean, radio's been used for a long time for spirit communications and instrument transcommunications. So I thought, well, you know, this is kind of interesting. You know, a radio that's scanning, at first it was hard to comprehend that basically a receiver radio that could actually, you could get these intelligent responses. So I had to kind of wrap my head around that at first. But yeah, slowly it started to make sense. And you know, that's how I look at it today, is it's got to have some intelligence to it for a response.
So when was the, okay, so you heard it in 2007. When was the first time you heard one in person, though?
Until I had one in my hands and I hacked it. So when we say hacked a radio, it's basically modifying it. So I had a Radio Shack radio and I hacked it. So it was that model. There was pins back there, so you had to count. Had some instructions.
So
you had, I had to bend that pin so it would do that scan. But you know, I mean, that was an earlier radio, so it wasn't the best ghost box out there. Let's say that. So you'd get a lot of fragments of the remnants of like broadcast radio and that. So
I'll never forget. We have one. I don't even know what it is. It was a newer, cheaper one, and. We're sitting around one night, and I heard, "Welcome back to Coast AM with George Norrie." And I'm like,
"Yeah,
hey, we got paranormal activity going on that one channel. Let's go back."
Yeah,
they weren't too thrilled with me.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about a ghost box. I mean, you're going to get a lot of one word, two words, and you know, sometimes they make a little sense, but then you get those phrases, and usually above the scan. So when they come through, everything kind of just stops, and it's just like, you know, the background staticky noise and the clicking of the radio, or depending on, you know, how it scans. And you get that, just, I call it popping out, and it's just, it's quite amazing.
I had to laugh, though, because that was quite the phrase that we heard. Like, because normally it clicked, you know, it doesn't really click, but it scans a lot faster than that. So for that phrase to be there, while it is traditionally normal to hear at that time in the morning, was still a little bit longer than the traditional that you get through. So,
yeah,
I found it funny.
Yeah. Well, what's the odds of having that happen on an investigation?
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
That's the fun part. Okay, so take me back. I'm picturing you at a desk, like I'm sitting at tonight, playing with a monitor or reading these directions. You get it bent over and ready to go, and you turn it on. Well, how's the first experience go?
Oh, it was quite amazing, actually. When I asked some questions, I said, I was just doing generalized questions. How are you? And it would say, fine. What's my name? And it would say, Bill. And, those kind of questions. And then I'd get a little further down and say, do you know my last name? And it would say, Hauser. So, yeah, that started to amaze me that you'd get these kind of responses. And then I asked, how do you die? And it said, with cancer. And that was kind of chilling to hear that when it said I died with cancer. So, what's the odds you're going to hear broadcast radio remnant saying die of cancer? It's not that at that particular moment. So the odds are low.
So why didn't you put it right back on the shelf? I mean,
I was fascinated. I was completely fascinated. You had some, real-time device that you could get some, pretty interesting results. And, you would use a recorder or, videotape them or however you like to record them. So you had some documentation. And I just kept growing and growing, and then, like I said, one radio led to another, and that got better quality sounds and faster scanning, more precise.
So how many radios have you been through now?
Right now, I have 32 ghost boxes and about 4 or 5 ITC equipment, meaning they're not really ghost boxes. You can use them either hooked up to recorders and that, so they're diodes, the Rotoduff diodes, for example, and I have a little gadget box. But basically, it's fragmented sounds in there, so it sounds computerized. But it basically, it's kind of like the creator actually is the creator of the Ovilus, but it was the early days of his. He had made those on the internet, so I bought one. And that one I found very fascinating because. The obvious also has like a dictionary mode, so you have a bunch of programmed words into it. So I was never fond of that type of system. So fragmented sounds, and if you get, like I had my full name, Bill Hauser, mentioned on it. And, I've had some other interesting results from it. So that was definitely something I enjoyed. It was interesting.
So if a customer like you, how did Radio Shack go out of business? No, I'm just kidding.
I don't know. Radio Shack was not around up here in Canada. I had to go to Bellingham to get that radio from. There was a Realistic radio, so I had to get that from Bellingham and bring it up. So it was a day out going shopping across the border. So, because a lot of the radios that were available up here couldn't be hacked back then. So I had to rely on Radio Shack at the beginning, but along the way I found ways of getting that. And then of course when eBay came around, it was a lot easier to buy ghost boxes and stuff like that. So
this is gonna sound like a stupid question. Are we still making radios today? I mean, like hackable radios, because I think everything's digital now, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, to a certain degree, those older radios had digital capability, shall we say, but the tuners and everything. So, but I mean, those are more technical questions. So, to be honest with you, I'm not really a technical guy per se when it comes to all the nuts and bolts of a radio. I'm more like, it's more for me about the contact field, and that's more about ITC. So, it's your connection to the radio, for a better term.
I have one more technical question for you, because I know this one has been a hot-button debate for years. Every time it seems I talk about a ghost box, this one comes up. AM or FM?
I prefer AM sometimes, but most of the time I use FM.
Any reason for that?
AM can work well in certain locations, but it's more susceptible to interference, so you get a lot of interference on it. So I prefer FM.
And plus, AM has a lot of talk on it, normally.
Yeah, talk radio, and there's more music on FM. Yeah, that's correct.
So, okay. This is interesting to me, obviously. Now, here's a fun one for you. How much, because I've heard you do these ghost books on the other shows, and that's great, but how much of that do you pull out real time, and how much of that can you come back through later and say, I missed X, Y, and Z? I'm sure it's gotten better through the years.
Yeah, it's gotten better. I mean, I remember the first time doing it was actually with Spaced Out Radio, the SOR, as a lot of people know it. And Dave and Scott there, he encouraged me to do it. And I was very skeptical on doing that because before that, if I did a radio show, it was usually audio files that you sent ahead of time and you played the highlights. And I was more comfortable with that. So doing a live thing there. So anyway, I looked at it very carefully and decided to do something that nobody else was doing at the time. I was in a car using my cell phone and communicating with Dave and no contact with the internet or anything and so on. And I was in an area that was beside an old school that was noted for its hauntings and that. So basically we started to do it that way. And it was amazing the amount of stuff that was starting through. And, you know, I mean, there's times where it got creepy and, you know, it just got really off the charts with replies and stuff. And then, you know, people would ask, can I get a hold of my mother or grandmother or whatever? And so you try that. And, you know, a lot of times it didn't go through. I couldn't do it. But then there's times it did. And then as I did it more and more, it got better and better. And now, you know, it's not too hard for me to try to get a hold of loved ones. And they recognize their voice and the credence of their voice and so on. And, you know, you always record so you can play it back.
So, now this why not just straight white noise?
Straight white noise? Well, you can do that too. I mean, you can do that at the bottom of the AM channel. But the thing is, with that, you're only going to get small fragments of words coming through. To be honest with you, it's not the easiest way to do it, or you can do the rocking between stations. That's another popular move, or direct radio. You know, there's different methods of doing those kind of things. So, or using an old tube radio between the stations. People have gotten some pretty interesting stuff. So, yeah, there's been different, like I say, radio's been used for a long time for communication to the dead. So.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because, I mean, obviously that'd clean up all the interference if you just used one, but I understand the variables. I'm fascinated by it, because I'm so, of course, so here's hot take number two, Bill. Mm-hmm. Maybe you'll agree with me on this one or disagree with me on this one. The ghost box gives me a headache.
Yeah, I would agree with it. It gives me a headache sometimes, but, you know, I've learned to condition myself to it. But each radio, I'll have to say, it's totally different. So it has a different feel to it. So that happens. So, but I can understand people listening to it. It's hard at first. They don't have that ear to catch those smaller, lower frequency voices that come through.
Yeah, we were talking this afternoon about you coming on. You said you weren't going to do the ghost box. I'm like, that's great. That's fine, because, like, I do appreciate it, and I do enjoy listening to it in very small samples, but I don't know if I'd like it in my ears tonight, so it's all fine with that.
Well, you know, now I've done a lot of the, you know, for well over 5 years, I've done the live ghost box stuff, and it's great. I enjoyed it and that, but I want to take a break from it. It does kind of wear you down a little bit, both mentally and a little bit physically. Sometimes I would be drained after a radio show. A lot of people don't realize it, so I'd have to kind of mellow out and, you know, definitely do your protection and everything. And to be honest with you, I treat the ghost box as a form of electronic mediumship. So it's like a tool. It's like saying putting the entities on a speakerphone, shall we say, that type of concept of listening so everybody can hear it.
So, Kat Ward from Paranormal Heart has a good question here, and I'm just going to jump on it because she just popped it up, and I like it better than the question I had for you, so we're going off it. What do you think about Faraday cages around ghost box? Ghost boxes?
Well, I've used forms of that, and, you know, mask the signals, and it does clean it up big time, and you do get stuff coming through. But the thing is a true Faraday cage is grounded, so you have to have a grounding to it. So I kind of created my own Faraday cage with a neutral ground. So it's like your car with the tires, so it's a neutral ground. And I was getting some interesting stuff through that. So, but again, you're limited to a lot of stuff that comes through, shall we say. It's hard to explain until you actually start hearing it. And, you know, what I'm looking for is that intelligent response.
So I've got to wander into this topic for a minute because it fascinates me. A large portion of my, well, not a large portion. Yeah, actually it is as I look at the people there, are Canadian that listen to this show live. And it has been that way for a while, and I can't quite understand it as a fellow Canadian. Do you have any advice for me that makes the show more Canadian? maple syrup, or
should put a Canadian flag up on your banner or something, or a small one. That's
some hockey talk, maybe.
Yeah, it never hurts.
Actually, I have some of that coming. I'll spare you though.
Yeah.
Right before I end the show, I'm gonna throw a hockey hot take. Oh, easy for me to say. So, have you done any, I don't want to say traditional investigating lately, or without the box, I guess, is where I'm headed. Old school, whatever, however you want to preference that.
Yeah, I have actually, not right at the moment, but I have earlier this year, I've gone and did some most work, and then, of course, I'm used as the specialist in the ghost box, so I do that kind of after the that part of the investigation. But, you know, I mean, the thing is, I've been trained, you know, I do things and stuff like that for EMF fields and, you know, all these different little things, and then filming and then taking photos and stuff like that. So,
do you enjoy that still?
Yeah, to some degree. I enjoy, you know, taking a camera, and, you know, you can do it different ways. You know, take one, two, three, and then, you know, if you don't get nothing in one, but in the third and nothing in the second. Yeah, I enjoy that, or just point and shoot kind of thing, kind of randomly. It's fun. Sometimes you get stuff that way too. So I always went by the feel of how I felt when I took. Oh, I kind of used a little bit of that intuitiveness of, you know, feel the energy of whatever is around me.
So she has a follow-up question here. Oh, she has two. Oh, she's killing it tonight. May I just call her and let her host the show? She wants to know, have you used compasses or Morse keys?
Not Morse keys, but I have used compasses, you know, more or less as a standalone gadget, shall we say. And, they can work, you know. And then, you know, there's sometimes you get into some locations where they start spinning around. I've seen that happen, and it's just, you know, unexplainable why they're spinning around. So, yeah, you're obviously picking up on some kind of an energy field. You know, you try to debunk it or whatever, you know, can it be debunked, or, you know, is there underground wiring, or, you know, whatever. So, or something, yes, like something that's being broadcast nearby or whatever. So, but yeah, they work quite well. That's old school, actually, compasses. That's old school. That's back in the 1800s, late 1800s.
So now I'm going to turn the tables on Kat Ward, even though she can't answer us, and this will be awkward at best, but have you used the Morse key? And if so, have you had any success? I'm just curious now.
Morse key?
Well, no, I know you haven't. I was talking to her, though, because she asked the question, so I'm just curious to see if she has.
Yeah, it's interesting, yeah.
It never crossed my mind, and then I'd have to look it up, and there's a lot of translation. I mean, not translation, but yeah, I guess translation works, of what you'd get to what. And has it worked? She said she's used one, so.
Yeah, that's cool. I have heard of people using induction mics, and maybe they were around an old train station where there was, telegraph transmissions to that building or whatever, and they pick up those kinds of codes and stuff that, just sort of randomly come in, and sometimes they can be heard to some degree. So
she'd got nothing. And of course, as you mentioned induction mics, I was thinking about the parabolic mic that I used to have.
Yeah.
And you'd walk around with this,
That's more like an energy imprint, so the induction would be better to pick that up. So, parabolic mic, well, it's good if you point it in that direction, but it doesn't mean you're going to pick something like that up with it.
It's really good until you find somebody who has a wicked sense of humor like you do, and they start screaming at you.
Yeah, it's wherever you point it, that's great. But what I like about a parabolic mic is anything off to the sides that you're not pointing, you don't get that background noise. So,
MLK, I can't ask that question if proton packs are any good.
Yeah.
I can't.
I actually used one time, a really good one. There was a handheld model, and it was actually used for broadcasting purposes for reporters in the field, and that thing worked really well for EVPs.
So, I mean,
it was expensive to use. So
Cat Word's other question, she told me she quit after this one. What piece of equipment do you think is just, what was the word she used? Hold on. Utter trash. There we go.
Well, there's some questionable equipment now on the paranormal market, shall we say. I find a lot of gadgets, there's stuff that works still no matter what. But the thing is, you have to kind of look at, what the marketing is behind it a lot of times and what the claims are and stuff. So, I don't want to mention certain equipment. Like, for me, the obvious, for example, with the dictionary mode, I don't like ever wanting to use that kind of thing. I'd rather use a radio that's a ghost box. I think your odds of getting something are a lot better and more intelligible, for example. But then, there's other cameras out there that claim that, they're really good. So, who knows? So.
Can I throw my answer out there just for the record for people? It's been been a while since I said this. Any phone app.
No, don't use those.
Doesn't matter what it is.
No, I have experimented with them, but I don't have any faith in them. They can easily be manipulated at the time of the software writer and that. So, depending on your phrases of questions, they could, come up with some kind of artificial intelligence to create a logical answer, shall we say. So, to be honest with you, I'm not a favorite of app, as far as I'm concerned.
And those complaints go to Bill Houser.
No.
I did not
I always say
that.
I'm a radio guy, so that's what I like to use. So.
In all these years of investigating, you've had to come across, you mentioned earlier coming across some things that aren't friendly, so to speak. I tell people all the time, I'm not worried about when I go investigating because my guard's up and I'm aware and do similar things. It seems like similar things. We didn't get deep into that, but there are times that, when you come back, to take care of things. But when I go, I joke about this, when I go to Walmart, I'm more, my guard's down and I'm not paying attention and more likely to bring something back. Do you find that to be the case?
For me, it's like if I'm going to, say, someone's funeral, for example, I find that very tough. Not the emotional part. Of course, that's sad in itself, but the spiritual side, shall we say, or the, I pick up on energies in funeral homes and stuff like that, and especially at a time that you're grieving too, you can be more vulnerable to that. So you are more sensitive. So yeah, it comes down to really having to learn how to block the best you can and, take precautions, go home, I light a lot of incense, like frankincense at home, and, you know, basically focus my mind. And, you know, the old saying, put the white light around you from head to foot, God's white light, and, you know, things like that. And, you know, those kinds of techniques. You know, I'm not grabbing a whole bunch of crystals or anything. I'm just, you know, doing stuff of that nature. And then sometimes, like a bath works well with Epsom salts. That's a really good way. Just whole etheric body energy around you.
So I've got to ask this question. I don't know why. It's bugging me, so I'm going to ask you. I know the answer to this. When they show EVPs on TV and they have what it says on the screen, does that EVP even count because they put it in your head?
Well, you know, anything with paranormal TV shows, my thought is it's all based on entertainment, unless it's like a very down-to-earth documentary. But my thoughts on documentaries, it should have a certain amount of historical aspects to it as well. And then, the you know, things that you catch investigating that you can put on there. But just your regular paranormal TV shows, to me, that's all entertainment, you know.
Yeah, I know.
I've been ridiculed in the past, but I keep saying it's all for entertainment.
Well, obviously it's for entertainment because they always catch something and okay, Bill, you've been on hundreds of investigations at this point in your life. Fair?
Yeah.
How many of them would make a good TV show?
I would say probably maybe when you take it down, maybe about 10, and then the rest are sort of, you know, it's
sitting in the dark talking
sketchy
to yourself.
Yeah. A lot of times I have gone on investigations where you don't get very much of anything. So.
And here's one. The ones that you do have something, do you have a camera pointed the right direction when it happens?
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Well, yeah. Okay, yeah, but
you know, the thing is when you know, like for me, how I take photos, it's more about the feel that I sense, and then I point the camera and shoot. And, you know, if I do it the step 1-2-3 method, or, you know, just randomly point and shoot, you know, whatever. So the thing you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, those kind of things can easily be criticized as well.
So, for our beginner paranormal investigators who probably aren't listening to the show, but we'll pretend they are for a moment, what advice do you have somebody for just getting into this?
Well, to start with, just keep to the basics, you know, EVP work and cameras, you know, like your point and shoot cameras to start with, maybe move to a IR night vision camera or a full spectrum, you know, keep it, you know, simple. Don't get into some of these fancy, you know, mapping cameras and stuff like that. I mean, to be honest with you, sometimes they can work very well, and other times it's a real kind of like a, it's hard to explain, but it's, I just don't put a lot of credence to sometimes some of the evidence that's produced from them.
So our mutual friend Everett Femer pops up here that you were on a show in the Philippines. And how are those shows different than the ones we produce in North America?
Well, they only have one show there, and that was I Wonder. And basically, I got invited on the TV show, and I was the first foreigner to be on that TV show. And what they do is a lot of reenactments of, you know, paranormal encounters with people and that and so on. But they also do kind of like on-site a little bit investigating with different groups or individuals, like myself, for example. We went out to a location that had a high rate of car accidents, and there's a lot of claims of seeing apparitions and so on. So, yeah, I was in the studio van. They had a van, and we I did some ghost box sessions. And the lady that was basically the producer, and she kind of jack of all trades there, she put a timer on me. So she says, I want you to get something within this time thing there. So the timer and hear, okay, I produced some things that came through on the ghost box. So it was very interesting. Names and stuff. And then also we started having some equipment malfunctioning with the camera crew. Their lighting, portable lighting stuff kind of went weird and it would dim down and go up again. And, you know, they checked everything, the batteries and everything. It was fine. And then it would go down. And, you know, I mean, you had all kinds of little things going on that night. So, but it was very interesting, you know, when you're in another country to see their culture and how they deal with the paranormal and so on. So, yeah, I found it very fascinating.
Back to Buddha for a second. How did they come across you? Just the internet?
Well, actually, I had a mutual friend that was involved with that TV network, and he suggested, why don't you, when you go over to visit over there, why don't you just give him a call or something? So ahead of time, I made contact with the producer and said, I'll be over at this time. And didn't really hear too much after that, just thank you very much kind of thing for your interest. And then while I'm over there having dinner, I got a phone call on my, I had a cell phone there. And basically it was the producer, and she asked me, are you still interested in coming on a TV show with us? And I said, well, of course. And so she said, okay, let's arrange for the interview part, and then we'll go from there. So we went over to the condo I was renting, and we did the interview part. And then after, we went out in their studio van with their camera crew. It was only two guys. And, it was very interesting. I found the way they did things over there was very unique in filming and stuff like that. So,
that's the only TV show you've been involved with?
I've been on some other smaller stuff, but nothing that's real substantiating. That was probably the biggest, as far as I know. It's one of the biggest TV shows in the Philippines. So, and it also has a worldwide following, so.
So, boy, I'm just trying to wrap my head around all the changes that you've seen in the last 25 years going with all. I mean, it's amazing how fast and how rapid all this stuff has kind of came to us.
Well, what I've seen the change is, of course, equipment. There's a lot of equipment now that's available to the general public if they have the money to buy it. Like I say, some of it might be good to use and some maybe not. So you have that aspect. So, you know, I don't really want to bash, you know, other companies and, you know, people that have spent some effort and time to produce these equipment. So I think, you know, if you try it out, that's great. And if it works, good. So that's kind of my thought on it. Reviews are always good. If you check reviews, find out how other people are finding these new equipment. So that's one of the biggest changes. And of course, the TV show came along. So I see now ghost hunting is a lot more acceptable than when I first did it. It was like you're kind of treated as a bit of an outcast, sort of, or, you know, you're looked at kind of weird. But now it's very much like, oh, that's fascinating, and so on. It opens up a better conversation, and that conversation leads to people's ghost hunting stories, or I say ghost experiences they've had either on holidays at a bed and breakfast or something like that.
Makes me think of a story about this particular business owner who was 100% skeptical of us going in to investigate, right? Didn't think it was necessary. The place isn't active or haunted or any of that stuff. Hey, Janice, come tell them these ghost hunters your story, though. And she'd, right, an employee would go by and she'd have us tell us the story and dismiss her. But, you know, there's not much here. Bill, come here. These ghost hunters here want to hear your story. Every employee, there was 10 people that were working there. She called over 7 of them that had their own unique story, right? And I said, you just had 7 people tell us stories, but you don't believe anything's going on here? And she's like, no, not really, but if you want to come in and poke around, I guess I'll let you sometime.
I've met people like that, too. And you know, managers at places like that, and they're when you're there is to kind of keep an eye on you and everything, and you know, their employees, they're experiencing stuff. I think sometimes it's a state of denial too with some people. They just can't handle it, so, or they don't want to recognize it.
So what is, okay, this is a bad question, but you'll understand. What is the most, not necessarily like the name of the specific place, but the overall category of place that is the most active? Because you've mentioned being in cemeteries and funeral homes, and I just can't, you know, like, what's your number
well,
one?
Well, I've been in hotels as well, and I've been in pubs, bars here in Canada. I've been in private homes, what can be very active, and sometimes private homes can have a lot of undesirable energy associated with it. So sometimes it's a very heavy, dark energy from layers and layers of, you know, of people that have lived there, especially if it's an older home or whatever. Historical locations here in British Columbia I've been to. So I've gone to Hat Creek Ranch, and that was a lot of fun. And, it was kind of like the Wild West kind of thing. And O'Keefe Ranch, that was another ranch, more in the central interior, and that was pretty interesting. A lot of history there. And then, of course, downtown Vancouver, I've been to, it used to be the old courthouse. It's an art museum, and it's also parts of it now are used by the University of British Columbia there, and for their arts and graphics and that. So, yeah, that was a pretty cool place. They still have a lot of historical stuff intact to it. So, yeah, the courthouse part, that was really cool.
So, okay, now here's the fun part of this. We're getting to the end of this. So I like to ask the first one isn't random, but the next few will probably be questions. If I could Willy Wonka golden ticket you somewhere to go investigate, where would you go?
Oh, like on your bucket list?
Yeah.
For me here, if it was in here in my area, I would say Riverview, because that's a formal mental institution. Used a lot for the filming industry now, but they have some sections that are still being, that are used for outpatient stuff for people with psychiatric problems. So that would be probably, that's a hard place to get into. I think usually if they want you in there, they want you to pay a big price to film there. So just like the movie companies do. So you have to have big pockets with lots of money. But yeah, that place would be interesting because there's been lots of stories. Even the film crews, they've experienced stuff there, and I've known some that work in the film industry, and they've experienced stuff too, personal experiences on site of doing filming there.
So, being a good paranormal investigator, you probably have your favorite breakfast cereal?
not really. I'm not a big one.
You're not a big...
I know where you're going with that.
Okay, well, then I'll get you with this other question. Then, your favorite beverage? It could be adult or whatever you want, whatever your favorite beverage is. I'll shut up.
Well, I'm a coffee drinker, so I like coffee. But yeah, I do like other beverages. I'm not a big alcohol drinker. But if I drink a cocktail, say, I like vodka and soda, twist of lime. Yeah, summertime I'll drink beer more than I don't touch it very much in the winter months. So yeah, that's kind of where I am with that.
Now, this one is obviously, I'm just not going to preference this one. Favorite TV show? Doesn't have to be paranormal.
Favorite TV show? I really enjoyed, the one with Josh Gates? I'm trying to think of the name of it now. I've watched it in the past. I really enjoyed it. I just like kind of the locations that he went to.
Destination Truth? Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah, I think that's the name. I know I've watched it in the past, and I just like the locations that they go to. I think it was kind of cool.
So when you're not out paranormal investigating, what do you do for fun?
What do I do for fun? I like to stay at home quite a bit, but I do go out. I enjoy dinners and socializing with people, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, I enjoy going to parks. I do a lot of walking in parks. Probably people have seen a lot of my pictures of on Facebook of my walks. And out here we have beautiful mountains, so I'm always fascinated by mountains. So I take pictures and stuff like that, you know, those kind of things.
Speaking of, thanks for drawing that one free. Where can people, you mentioned Facebook, where can people find you to contact you if they have any questions or whatever?
Well, I'm also on YouTube. I have Can Dewey YouTube, and then I put another one out under William Hauser. So I'm kind of like an extension of the first one. And Audioboom, I've got a site there. I've done a little bit of podcasts on there as well. But I also have a lot of audio files that people can listen to at their leisure of Ghostbox sessions and so on. Of, you know, like replies and stuff like that that are intelligible.
Yeah, Bill. Thanks for being on. No, don't worry. I kind of threw myself too, because I was looking at the clock and I'm like, I promised that hockey hot take and I don't want to take too long, but I don't want to push you off too soon. I'm doing math over here and it's like, he's done talking. I scared myself. That's always classic.
Well, it's still early here in my neck of the woods.
Well, I'm talking about the end of the show. I've got 3 minutes left.
Yeah.
So I'm going to push you off and get to this hockey hot take unless you want to hear it.
Oh, I'll sign off, and I'd just like to say bye to everybody, and thank you, Jim, for having me on your wonderful podcast.
Thanks, Bill. That's Bill Hauser of, like I said, good guy, all the fun stuff. Okay, so Geo Observation sent me a story this afternoon. I had not seen it until he sent it to me. Thankfully, he sent it to me. For you people out there who want my opinion on things, that's the best way to do it, because the world spins fast. But I saved this observation, bad pun, for the show, because it was obviously Tuesday, and I had the opportunity to do this way instead of replying via tweet. He wanted to know what I thought about the Pittsburgh Penguins being sold to the Fenway Manchester United group. And I'm excited for two reasons. A, I think Mario deserves the cash out and enjoy his life. I guess he's still going to be a minority holder, and he's probably always going to be connected to Pittsburgh, even if he isn't from Pittsburgh. He is a Pittsburgher, though. He will always be a Pittsburgher. But if he wants to move back to Canada or go south or whatever he wants to do, he's earned the right to do that. And so mad props to him for taking the opportunity to get the team sold, make hand over fist. Good time to do it. I mean, I think I've seen a number around $600 million. They put up $130 million to get in. So, man, the money's there. So I can't fault him one bit. Yeah, the Fenway Sports Group, Liverpool. Oh, my bad. Sorry. Oh, man. Somebody across the pond is going to execute me for naming the wrong soccer team. Oh, football team. Oh, goodness. I better quit while I'm ahead. My apologies. But the Fenway Sports Group, they seem to be doing good things. They've also got the partnership there with Roush and Brad Keselowski and NASCAR. So, man, good stuff there. Yeah, I'm excited. I think they've got traditionally good brands, so I think the Penguins fall right in line with that. And everything I've seen from the Red Sox, and I think Jack Roush is coming the right direction, so we'll see. I could be horribly wrong. But I think the Penguins are also going to end the period of time where they're going to have to rebuild a little bit. Malkin and Crosby are getting a little bit older, so be prepared, Penguins fans. It has nothing to do with ownership changing. It has something to do with Father Time. But enough random sports talk about my Penguins.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mountain Report. Stay tuned for details on saving money at the Duck Pond Shop. I hope you enjoyed this report. please subscribe so that you can join us again. And if you appreciate the show, leave us some stars or a review. For more notes from this show or other great shows, check out Mallard.com. A reminder, the views and opinions of this show are those of the host and guest and do not represent any sponsors, affiliates, or any other partners of the Mallard Report. Now for your money-saving tip. Promo code Mallard at checkout of duckpondshop.com, where you can get your t-shirt, coffee mug, and other great products. That's promo code Mallard at checkout, duckpondshop.com. Until next week, stay safe and keep quacking.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dino Tripodis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
And, yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these, and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.